So thanks for coming out to the first talk at 9:30 in the morning. So I'm going to talk about some work that I was doing over the last couple months in collaboration with Lauren here and our advisor, Roger Melko. So the basic idea was to compute some entanglement and relative entropies for different boundary conditions on 1 plus 1 CFTs. So first of all, what are twisted boundary conditions and why are they physically relevant? One case they arise is something like the Aronov-Bohm effect, where you have a cylinder, or in our case, we just care about a ring, which carries some scalar field on it, and you pass a flux, magnetic flux, through the ring, and outside the magnetic field zero. So normally we take the field to be single valued along this ring, and you have some vector potential, but you could rewrite this problem by redefining your fields so that the vector potential gets absorbed into the field, which is no longer single valued. This is okay because your action is still single valued, and so all your observables are still okay. It's just a convenient redefinition to introduce this complex field instead. And numerically, it's pretty easy to do this. So one of the questions was just how does the entanglement entropy depend on this twist angle? Would it be the same for periodic versus antiperiodic conditions or any arbitrary angle? Just as a quick reminder, entanglement entropy minus trace rho log rho. I'll be considering 1 plus 1 CFT on a circle, so it's periodic in L, and the circumference is L. And we'll consider some subregion A, and you just obtain the entanglement by tracing out the degrees of freedom associated with A complement, which you could do with some replica trick if you want as well. But I'm going to talk about a numerical method that was used a number of years ago, mostly for free theories. And the starting point is you can rewrite your density matrix as some exponential of a modular Hamiltonian, or sometimes called the entanglement Hamiltonian in condensed matter, which is diagonal in this A dagger A basis, which are the creation annihilation operators for the field in that subregion. And its eigenvalues, epsilon, are called the entanglement spectrum. And so the entanglement entropy is just given by this trace here with some normalization factor. And conveniently, we already know what the trace of A dagger A is from Bose-Einstein statistics. That's just the Bose factor. And then likewise, the normalization constant is pretty easy to compute. So all you need is this entanglement spectrum, the eigenvalues of the modular Hamiltonian, to get the entanglement entropy. And so for free theories, which you can write in this form, so this K matrix would include a mass term if you have a mass. It would include like the derivative terms, the gradients, or any other interactions. No interactions. And it's convenient because this K matrix is directly related to the two-point correlation functions of the field and its conjugate momenta, which I call X and P matrices. So as you can see, if K was like M squared, then this X matrix would go as 1 over the root of M squared, so 1 over M. So that would diverge with the mass. One of the advantages of these twisted boundary conditions is that that divergence disappears. So we can take the mass equals 0 limit for twisted boundary conditions, which we can't do for periodic boundary conditions. And the point where the twist enters in here is in this K matrix. It's just the top and bottom corner terms, so the 1 in L and L in 1. So it's pretty easy to just check this out numerically to see what the entanglement entropy looks like. And to do that, so we first reduce the X and P matrices to that subregion A, compute their square root of the product, which gives you what's called the correlation matrix. And then its eigenvalues, you can work out, are directly related to the entanglement spectrum through this formula. And so you can rewrite your entanglement entropy directly in terms of these eigenvalues. So once we know that K matrix, which is almost by assumption, we just need to do a couple diagonalizations, and then we can have the entanglement entropy. OK, let's take a look at what it looks like now. So here's a plot of the entanglement entropy for a couple different twist angles as a function of the interval size. So as it's symmetric, as usual. And when it approaches The full interval, it vanishes, same thing for zero. The shape of it looks familiar. It's kind of like the C on 3 log sine formula from Calabrese and Carty. And you can see that for smaller and smaller twists, it gets larger and larger, which makes sense because the periodic case, which diverges in the mass, and we have mass equals zero here. And of course, you should note also that the twist of pi is the minimum one, because after that, it's just symmetric. One thing that wasn't certain from this plot is if this does actually obey the Calabrese and Carty formula, C on 3 log L. And so if you just kind of adjust the plots to look at them, you can see that they definitely have a different functional form. It's more than just a different effective central charge or a non-universal constants. The whole form of the entanglement is different. And this was successfully derived just a couple months ago by Shiba at Harvard, independently of us. And he deduced that the Rennie entropies just depend on some four-point function. And so the alpha Rennie entropy is that, where I've hidden, you know, these complex hypergeometric functions in small fonts so that you don't have to worry about them. You can't analytically continue this to get the entanglement entropy. You can try in certain limits, but it's just too complicated of a formula. And from all that we can verify, it seems like this formula works. It matches our numeric result very well for at least the second Rennie entropy. Okay, the next question we thought of was, how can we categorize the difference between, say, the reduced density matrix with twisted boundary conditions and the reduced density matrix with periodic boundary conditions? And one measure of the difference between states like this is the relative entropy. So if the two states are the same, you want the relative entropy to vanish. And if they're orthogonal, in the classical sense, that would be like two probability distributions that don't overlap at all, then the relative entropy would be infinite. So they're perfectly distinguishable. And the relative entropy has a number of nice properties in quantum information theory, and it's used in holography as well. But to compute this, we just need to modify that approach we were using before to include two states. This time, I'm calling the creation annihilation operators for, say, the twisted boundary condition, I'll call them B, and then for, say, periodic, I call them A. The first term's fine in the relative entropy, that's just the entanglement. Second term's the problem term, it involves this trace, which includes the A daggers, which correspond to sigma, and the other density matrix. So the best way to do this would be to write A dagger A in terms of B dagger B's. So taking some linear combination, you can do this, dropping the cross terms, of course, because the trace vanishes. And then the problem just reduces to finding these M and N matrices, which transform these A daggers into B daggers. For the free theory, this can be done because you can always write your fields and conjugate momenta as a sum and difference of creation annihilation operators, like the simple harmonic oscillator, with some matrices alpha, beta in front. And these can be determined from the X and P correlation matrices. It's a little non-trivial, so I'm not going to go into that here. But then from that, you get these M and N matrices, which you can plug into the previous formula, and you'll have the second term for the relative entropy and the whole thing. All right, moving on to results. So before I talk about mine, I just want to mention kind of what I would expect. So the only other time I've seen the relative entropy computed exactly for, say, a 1 plus 1 CFT was this paper by Nima Lashkara, who's now at MIT, I think. And he computed the relative entropy between the ground state of that CFT and the first excited state that's excited by the insertion of a vertex operator. So he got this smooth function. It's analytic, but I didn't write the form here just because the plot's what's important to me. You can see it diverges as the region goes to the full region size, which is good. It makes sense. That means that the full ground state is orthogonal to the full first excited state, which makes sense. And as the region vanishes, as the region shrinks, the relative entropy goes to zero very nicely, which again makes sense. It should be zero when the region is zero, and it should probably be a small difference between these states for a small region, which just means that they're more similar. For a small region, these density matrices are kind of similar, but for a large region, they're very different. So I was kind of surprised with my result that the relative entropy doesn't seem to go to zero smoothly when comparing a twist angle with the periodic boundary conditions. So this is a plot, again, of the relative entropy for a twist versus periodic versus the interval size. So it makes sense that it goes to infinity here at 1. That just means they're orthogonal again. But at 0, you get this kind of exponential dependence on the twist angle. So this non-zero gap, if I call it that. It's also got a kind of weird change in concavity compared to the last plot. And if you plot the gap as a function of m for periodic cases, for the twist versus the periodic case, you can see it diverges with log m. But the thing is, this is not just unique to a twist angle of 0, periodic. It's actually more general than that. Between any two twist angles, I do have a finite gap. So you can see that when I'm comparing, say, theta 1 is equal to 0 with any other, with theta 1 is 0.2 pi, and theta 2 is 0, you have this huge gap that I had to cut off the axes. And then when the two angles are equal, the relative entropy vanishes, which makes sense. It should always vanish for two states that are the same. But for any other twist angles, we have this finite gap. And so you might think maybe this would go away with finite size scaling, hopefully. And this is just because we're limited to lattice of size, say, you know, between 200 and 500. But it's not so clear cut. Just plotting the gap size versus log of 1 over L, for instance, this would work for the entanglement entropy. You see that the gap almost looks linear in this, which is quite problematic because that would mean that at sufficiently large L, the gap would go negative, which makes no sense. So there must be some unknown finite size scaling of this, of the relative entropy, of the gap that we don't know. Anyways, so just to conclude, the entanglement entropy itself depends on that twist angle non-trivially. It's a totally different functional form than what Calabresi and Cardi derived. And this relative entropy has a non-zero gap, particularly for periodic boundary conditions as compared to a twist angle, which means that the two states, even for small regions, are drastically different. So you wouldn't be able to do some kind of expansion of the periodic density matrix in terms of like a twist angle or vice versa. It might not even be possible to expand one twist in terms of a different twist, which is kind of surprising to me. And then, of course, there's this unknown finite size scaling that we're still kind of struggling with. Anyways, thanks for listening.
I actually have a question. So I noticed that you're doing, you know, this simulations up to small L.
Right.
Can you just set L equal to zero and see whether the formula simplifies or?
No, because then the matrices we're dealing with are just numbers, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, I guess they're zero size matrices, so we can't really do anything with that. But it should be zero at zero. I haven't plotted that point because I think it's kind of deceptive to show the zero point way down here or whatever connecting to that. So I just plotted the points that we can compute. Likewise, you know, I'm not plotting infinity. But.
No, so I'm just confused that you're saying that the difference is non-zero as you go to zero, but
right,
as
yes.
Zero, right?
Yeah, it should.
Yeah.
I can't do it numerically though, right?
Okay.
but it should be 0 at 0. But yeah, for mine, I'm just taking the lattice points like 1 out of, say, big L is like 500 or something. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe could you go to the next slide again? Yeah, I think you just said the next one, sorry.
Oh.
Yeah, so I think you just said, I just want to make sure I understand the way you define this gap, it's with one site?
Yeah, then, just one site. Okay. So the first point on that plot there.
Yeah.
What type of partition are you using? Does the subregion pass the place where you're imposing the boundary conditions in it, or you're taking the subregion away from it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, so my subregion always starts at the first lattice point and then goes out by little l. And yeah, my the twist part comes in between the last point and the first point.
Okay.
So yeah, I could try definitely moving the region over by one or something.
What I have doesn't make sense, but you cannot distinguish that if you have this twist, maybe
right.
Something can happen.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good idea.
Any other questions? Have you looked at all at the limit where these angles are very similar? So like, you know, here you're looking at zero and theta, but if this theta goes to zero,
yeah, so if they're the same, then the relative entropy basically looks like zero the entire time up until some very, very small part here, and then it jumps up.
And what if
as
it's
it
like
should.
A very small angle that you immediately
near periodic?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're ever comparing to periodic, you always have this gap right away.
Yeah.
But just two close twist angles, it's mostly zero. Yeah. No matter what. It's weird. Oh well.
I missed a little bit what's the difference between this slide and the previous one.
This one and this one? So this is Nima's result for the difference between a ground state and a state excited by a vertex operator. And mine is comparing the ground state of periodic versus the ground state of twisted boundary conditions.
But you said you would expect to find the same thing.
Yeah, just my intuition is that as the region goes to zero, you would think that the states become less distinguishable. For a smaller region, there's like more overlap between the states, smoothly, right? I would think, that's what I would think. Anyways, yeah.
I think some example of what kind of physical system have
so yeah, that's, one physical system would just be a cylinder with a flux through it. So you could rewrite some field on that cylinder. You could rewrite the field on that cylinder as some complex field that's no longer single valued. And that's just because you're absorbing the effect of that vector potential into the field itself. Yeah.
In this analogy, zero field is no twist.
Right.
And infinite field is twist of pi.
Yeah, so, well, a zero twist is also if theta equals 2 pi. But yeah, a zero field would be periodic, right? Yeah, which is weird again that you could just, so turning on this field is very different than having no field, right?
Okay.
Okay,
let's thank Matt one more time.